everybody. This is I'm Kevin Kovac, and this is the Dirt Reporters for the week of April 17th, 2024. Joined again by Kyle McFadden, our man on the prowl out on the circuit this past weekend. He went to the World of Outlaws Illini 100 at Farmer City Raceway, and our West Coast weekend editor, Aaron Clay. He's back with us again to have some discussion about the weekend and some other things. I think we might have another topic for the end of the show. But Kyle, I definitely want to start with talking with Kyle about the Illini 100 weekend at Farmer City's first time, but actually was able to even get in since 2021. The last 2 years were canceled early because of the crappy spring weather. They moved the weekend back a week and a little bit more into April than it's been so early in April through its pretty much its existence for more than a decade. And this time, man, Kyle, it was perfect, right? I mean, that weather, that was the best weather. I mean, I went to a lot of the Illini's early on when I was with the Outlaws, and it was usually really, really cold. I mean, there was in wet and muddy in the pits a lot of years. And this year, man, I mean, I think you went into the 70s, had sunny weather. You couldn't ask for it. It looked like a great crowd and some great racing also, even though Bobby Pierce sort of messed up the Saturday race with his blowout win by almost 9 seconds.
It really was perfect. That's actually what Shannon Babb said, and he on Saturday, and he didn't even last all but 3 laps after he had broke a right rear axle. And he said the night was perfect outside of that, but he was able to enjoy it as a spectator, which he wouldn't have thought because he was going to start, or he did start on the front row. So I guess that just speaks volumes as to how good the weekend went. Outside of like the 25 mile per hour gusts right before hot laps on Friday, everything was literally perfect, I would have to say. And Bobby Pierce's 10-second or 9-second win on Saturday. So, but no, this race was, it was on my schedule last year, and I was kind of bummed that it got rained out last year. So it was cool to get on over and finally see it for myself. And, you know, it was, I guess, two things that we learned, or I learned from this past weekend. One is that Bobby Pierce is exactly who we thought he was. And, you know, two, I think Nick Hoffman has for sure earned some respect for our Dirt on Dirt top 25 poll this week. So yeah. If you go back and read my story that I did, he said he was carried some extra motivation because he was 19th going into the weekend on the poll and felt like he should be a little higher. So he's 10th now. And I felt like outside of those two, like Nick Hoffman and Bobby Pierce, they were on their own tier, and you could make the argument that Bobby was on a tier above Nick, but it was outside of that. Yeah. It was a perfect weekend, and it was very nice to feel like that was kind of the start of the Outlaw season. So yeah, it was a great weekend.
How about that finish too on Friday? Let's start there. How about that, Aaron? Man, that thing was 0.072 seconds. It was that Hoffman won. Yeah, and Hoffman looked like he had the race on the last lap, and then he made a little misstep there in 3 and 4 and let Bobby Pierce get underneath them and race him to the line. They came together off a 4. I mean, what does that? Yeah, that has to go down. That's going to be one of the finishes of the year, if not one of the races of the year, because of that finish. And it was like that little extra thing, though, because Farmer City doesn't have a home stretch wall. They have that moat, like the horse track on the outside. And so, how many times do you see a guy win the race when he's off the racetrack? And that's what happened. I mean, that was a pretty cool ending there, wasn't it, Aaron?
Oh man, that was such a good finish. We had a lot of good like quotes and takeaways from that, because you know Hoffman and Victor Lane said he stepped on it over in 3 and 4, you know, opened the door for Pierce. Pierce pushes him off the track, you know, is a crazy photo finish. I think Pierce's right rear spoiler actually nipped the A-pillar and the roof of Hoffman, which how often is he
damn near went inside the car, it looked like, when you see some of those pictures, the way he was sideways coming off the fourth turn. And as Hoffman was trying to get back on the track and then ended up going off of it.
100%. So a lot of weird things happened. You know, I think that was just kind of a weird thing where Pierce was still on the racetrack and Nick had just dropped off the racing surface a little bit. So Bobby Spoiler was at roof level with Hoffman's car, which you don't see that very often. You know, that very rarely happens in general. But then I think Pierce thought he won. Like they had to like, they didn't show it on the live feed, but I think he actually pulled up as if he was the winner and they were like, oh no, I'm sorry, you were second. So like there was that awkward exchange as well that maybe, you know, Kyle could touch upon, but there was just a lot going on. That Friday night opener was wild.
Yeah. Right. Kyle, what was the atmosphere yeah. like there when everybody went to Victory Lane? I mean, that's Farmer City is another track that has that cover grandstand. So that gets the crowd a little bit more, you know, it accentuates the sound, I think, you know, and they were right in front when they pull up into Victory Lane, it's right there on that horse track. So what was it like when Bobby pulls up there first? I believe, I think he got there before Hoffman did, didn't he?
Yeah. Yes, he did. And it was interesting because from my vantage point, I was down in turn one. So like you can't see three and four from that angle because there's the big tower like in the middle of the infield. And so I'm like waiting for them to round turns three and four. And then like all of a sudden I see Bobby pull alongside Nick and I'm like, oh my gosh, like this thing's a photo finish. And then he runs into him. And then from the infield view, it didn't look like Nick like ran off the racetrack. Like it's hard to tell like where the track runs out to until you watch the replay and you're like, oh my gosh, like this isn't like I didn't realize how far he ran off the track. And so, and I don't think Bobby really realized either until like he got, you know, he crosses the checkers and then on the backstretch, there's the big like jumbo screen and it says, you know, Nick Hoffman had won the race. So Bobby thought like he beat him back to the line. And if he didn't get hung up in Nick's like roof, like all the components that go into putting the roof together, like he would have won that race because I mean, I thought he was going square straight toward the infield. Like it was quite surprising that he saved it, you know? I mean, he was that sideways. And so, but the scene in Victory Lane, there was, you know, just like any Victory Lane scene, you have the group of photographers lining up waiting to get their pictures and Bobby pulls right in front of the photographers and trying to make his case and statement that maybe he had won the race. And I'm like, oh, geez, what's going to happen here? And nothing really escalated up to that point. Bobby saw a replay, then it made more sense to him and you know, Nick Hoffman celebrated and people were booing him and cheering him too, but the boos, you could definitely hear the boos and it was quite the scene. But it all worked out in the end and it'll definitely go down as I feel like of all the finishes I've ever covered here at Dirt on Dirt, that's gotta be up there. If not tops Golden Isles from last year when Kyle Larson made that, go ahead or the last lap pass around Brandon Overton, I think during last year's Super Bowl racing. So that's right up there with the best of them. And it wasn't quite Deer Creek last year though, for Kevin, I think you were
yeah,
there.
Right. Yep.
And so, but it's definitely up there.
Yeah. That Deer Creek, it took, I don't know, probably 10 minutes before there was an announcement of even who won. But Deer Creek also was, it's a little, that Farmer City like was such a weird finish because again, they're so far apart that you don't usually when you got a photo finish to drive that the cars are pretty got to be pretty close with a track without a wall and a horse track there on the like that's like a moat basically. That makes it a whole different story. I mean, they had to basically go with that transponder. At first, I was like, is that transponder even going to work? I hope it goes all the way across the, you know, the moat there, the horse track, or they won't, they're going to have to go by video or pictures or just eye because the camera was way, way off from the start finish line. That start finish line is way down towards turn one on such a little track. And there, I don't know if anybody got like a right, perfectly straight on shot. I mean, and that's going to be another one back like to Dirt Creek. Where was the finish line? You know, like, you know, everybody has to determine that. And I know Eldora put a line on this is where the finish line is. This is where the transponder is. But there, I mean, God, it's such a wide angle there. You know, there's really no finish line. I mean, when you see that, Aaron, did you think that he was that Hoffman won? Or I mean, it's tough to tell. I mean, you had to go by the transponder.
Yeah, there was no way to tell, because you know, from the live stream that I was watching, it's not centered on the start finish line. Like you said, the start finish line at Farmer City is kind of closer to the entrance of turn one. And where the video was set up, it was not in line with the start finish line. So it was just a tough situation where the angle wasn't perfect. So there was no definitive evidence on video as to who won. Deer Creek last year, I feel like it was a little bit more where the video was maybe telling a different story than what the transponders were telling. But with Farmer City, we had to completely rely on transponders because there was nothing that was straight down the line, you know, where you could even try to begin to argue
right. What
may have truly transpired if you didn't trust the transponder. But one thing that I took from last year's, you know, Deer Creek controversy is that if we trust the transponder for 29 out of 30 laps, we kind of have to trust it on that 30th lap too. You know, I know it's frustrating when it comes down to a finish of a race. You know, we don't necessarily want the transponder to be the be all or the tell all, but you know, we rely on it for X number of laps, all but that last lap. Sometimes we have to rely on it that last lap as well. And that Farmer City's, you know, that Friday night opener was a perfect example of us needing to rely on the transponder because we had nothing else really definitive to go off of.
Yeah. Yeah. If you don't have a video camera right at the line, if you don't have one of those, you know, horse racing photo finish cameras right at what is determined to be the line, heck, you can't even do that at Farmer City. There's the flag stand is in the infield, surrounded by tires. So like you can't have a photographer right there at the line. It's unless you move it, I guess, before the starter spot there. So it was definitely weird. I do want to mention a touch on Nick Hoffman winning that race. And I know like Kyle had mentioned him too. And Aaron, you'd agree or two about how he's come along. He's the only guy now with two wins at the World of Outlaws so far this year. He was the first double winner. So he's really, let me go back on that. Is he the first double winner, or did Devin Moran win too?
Well, Moran's got remember.
Ed Belushi. Moran, all right. Yeah. So yeah, that's right. That just hit me there. I remember he won those for one in the first time there. So, but yeah, regardless though, first regular with two wins with the World of Outlaws, and he's really come around. I remember talking to his car owner Ty Torrig last year when he hired Hoffman, he's never run a full late model season. He's great in a modified. He's run partial seasons, you know, especially when he took over in the Scott Blomquist car the 1 year to like the second half of the year. But man, he's never run a full season. And Ty was, man, what do you think? What do you think he's gonna do? You think he got a kid here that's gonna work, gonna be good? And I'm like, I think he's got talent. I mean, you don't win 35, 40 modified races or any kind of race in 1 year without having talent. And I really thought that he would have his struggles because he'd be on the road for the first time. But man, I was like, Ty, just stick with him and he's going to come around, especially if you give him another year. And last year he did have that stretch during the summer where he just struggled, new tracks all over the place. And now, man, he comes out great at Volusia, comes out great at Farmer City. And now he's going to be going to tracks that he has actually been to again. And I think we have a guy that's going to be another late model star here. I just wanted to mention that because I think that Hoffman's really on his way. Before we switch gears, like to go something different. There's other stuff that happened this weekend. One of the things obviously was Jonathan Davenport sweeping the MLRA Spring Nationals at Lucas Oil Speedway, and talk about a guy who's getting a track down now. That's Jonathan Davenport. Kyle, you were there for the Show Me 100 last year and saw him. I think he won the first two and then he didn't. He had trouble in the last. He ran out of gas in the 100 lapper because it was such a marathon. But man, something's going on there with Jonathan Davenport in Wheatland.
Seven wins now, counting the SRX. I think it's seven. Yeah. Over the last year, literally since last April. So 7 wins there over the last year at one place. It sounds like Eldora to him now, you know. So, but he just has that place figured out. I feel like when you look at a place like Wheatland, it doesn't really build up a cushion. And so I would have to imagine that, you know, drivers that master the middle, skating through the middle of the racing surface, they would favor that would allow a guy like Jonathan Davenport to really shine. And so, you know, that would be my reason as to why he's been so dominant there. He's so good through the middle. And I do recall that Show Me race last year, or the Show Me 100 last year, where he did run out of fuel in the closing laps. And so, but, you know, that race is almost a month away. And so, and we'll have to see just how much of what we saw this past weekend will carry on into that race and on into the spring months and on into summer. So, I mean, Jonathan Davenport's back up to number 2 now in our poll, if that means anything to, you know, him and where he's at. And so I think it does. And, you know, he's certainly added $27,000 back to his pocket, if anything. So it was a good weekend for him.
Yeah, it was it was a heck of a field there too. 44 cars showed up for that. They had great weather also. I think they were even a little warmer than Farmer City. Kind of the warmth was coming from the west there, and kind of hit there before it even hit the. I mean, both days are pretty warm, and pretty great weather. And they had made that race. It was 5,000 to win and 10,000 to win last year in previous years. This year, 7,000 on Friday, 20,000 on Saturday. So it was damn near like a Lucas Oil Series race. You really got that feel. You had more than a half a dozen Lucas Oil regulars there. What did you think, Aaron, about like how that event was kind of pumped up a little bit with the purse increase, and what could it be in the future for a spring race now that the track and the series for MLRA as an opener, maybe a big show in the spring now.
Yeah, it's definitely growing. You love to see that, you know, those like regional type events just, you know, kind of growing legs and, you know, getting bigger. Obviously that the bigger payouts help. It's also at a good spot in the schedule too. You know, some Lucas Oil guys, they want to stay active. They want to keep racing. You know, that's what these guys do for a living, obviously, or for the most part. But they, you know, gives them a reason to go get their cars, you know, get them ready, go see what they have. It's also a good tune up for the Show Me, because, you know, it's a little over a month, you know, before the Show Me. So it's a good kind of a warm up and a good, you know, see what you have. Davenport actually unveiled the new Longhorn chassis, which he mentioned in Victory Lane on Friday. So that's a good time for them, for those guys to, you know, try some new equipment, see how it works out. And as I mentioned in our Fast Talk discussion, you know, it's kind of like Jonathan Davenport of 2022. Like, he was just gone. And Ricky Thornton, you know, once Thornton got into second place on Friday, you know, he started to catch him a little bit. I was like, oh, here we go, we're going to have a good race. And, you know, Davenport wasn't having it. So once you get out in the clean air like that, if you have a fast car, you can just check out. And that's what we saw. But yeah, I think that event, you know, if it keep building up like it has been, I think it'll just get bigger and bigger, especially if those payouts continue to increase.
It's a good good weekend. It does fit in the schedule well. And it's like Lucas Oil gives their guys a break. You know, like the guys wanted some break. They're not racing from that Bronzetown Atomic weekend until the last weekend in April with Georgetown, Delaware, and Hagerstown, Maryland, Port Royal, PA. So, you know, but it still keeps, I think it's like a good thing where, like, let's put this MLRA bigger show in the middle of that break. And then if our guys want to go race again, they're racing our sister series. It kind of works out well, and they get to go run again at Lucas Oil Speedway to get some laps before the Show Me. I feel like it's kind of a good situation there with that race, you know, making it a little bit bigger. Let's both of you guys come up with one more thing. Well, this is an early one more thing. One more thing from the weekend, you know, one more touch on something that kind of caught your eye from the other races this weekend. I'll give a quick mention to those Hunt the Front races down at down at Alltech, the southbound throwdown that they had down there for 5,000, I mean, 5,000 Friday, 15,000 on Saturday. Two interesting winners. You had Carson Ferguson won on Friday night, which was Carson's first win since he became the primary driver of the Paler Motorsports car after Tim McCready headed out to a Rocket Chassis house car. So that was a big one. I mean, I'm sure that's a big, huge confidence builder for Carson to get a win like that. And then Joseph Joyner wins on Saturday night over, guess what? Scott Blomquist, second place, his best finish in a few years also, back to when he got a second place finish at Charlotte 2 years ago in an XR race. So Blomquist showed some life there for sure. And of course, he said that he's ready for some more wins afterward. But Joseph Joyner got the win. He did rubber up on Saturday. It wasn't the greatest action, but Joyner was like, hey, don't care. Nobody, my name's on the list. I got the $15,000 win. He needed it. He got it. And a pretty good congratulations to him. How about you, Kyle? What do you, anything kind of stick out otherwise from the weekend?
Carson Ferguson's win and then a podium there on Saturday definitely stuck out. And Scott Blomquist, you know, his runner up definitely had people coming out of, or having so much enthusiasm that he's back in the back of the podium, at least on Facebook and social media. And so that was cool to see. And I think also just like the car counts across the whole country. I mean, the Hunt the Front race on Saturday had, I'm checking, 35, and then Farmer City mid 40s. And then Wheatland also was in the mid 40s too. So that was very encouraging to see, because when you have races, as we all know, races scattered across the country, you really don't know what you're going to get. But it turned out to be a great weekend. And so I'll also touch on the Southern All-Stars race really quick. It was unfortunate to see Dale McDowell get disqualified for it seemed like a miscommunication on how much tires his team was allowed to use. The series has a tire maximum tire allotment on a race night, and they exceeded that, and there was a miscommunication there. So there's a lot of posts on Facebook from both sides, the series and Shane McDowell Racing. So I'm not going to get into all of that. You guys can read all of the posts and come up with your own takeaways from that. But Ray Cook was deemed the winner there. It was a $10,000 payday too. So that's one thing also from the weekend.
Yeah, that was a major story there, I guess, of the weekend with the Dale McDowell disqualification. Because it didn't happen immediately. It wasn't like, hey, this guy ran too many tires. You're allowed six tires, and they said he ran seven, which I'm still not quite. I was doing my calculations here, and they said he had He had four marked tires. And then he had one marked tire from the heat races. He had one marked tire on his car for the feature, and the three other ones. So that means that I'm thinking, isn't that six? I'm counting up six on that, right? Because he ran three. He had four on for the heat races. He kept one of them on, and then he ran three more for the feature. But I mean, I'm not sure. We have to check on it. It might be you're only allowed to change two for the feature. I think that might have been the situation too. You know, I'm not sure, but. It just seems exactly. Weird. My calculations are all off. It just seems like it was a big time miscommunication between an official who checked them before the race, and McDowell didn't hear him right, didn't know what he was saying. And also McDowell admitted that he didn't go to the driver's meeting before when it was said, because this rule wasn't put in place in the rule book. It was more of a, it says six tires you're allowed, you know, on a tire bulletin on the race notes on Facebook and during the driver's meeting. So I guess it was a miscommunication. Unfortunately, lost $10,009 because of it. A bad one there. But Aaron, just how about you? And one other thing that you noticed from the weekend?
Yeah, you guys took all mine, but no, I was just going to say Bloomer Zach, man. I can't believe that. You know, I'm definitely I'm definitely more of a Billy Moyer is my GOAT kind of guy, because, you know, Billy always comes out and races there in Arizona, especially, you know, about 5 or 10 years ago, more often than nowadays. But no, it was kind of starting to get kind of sad to see, you know, Blomqvist, and, you know, it was getting rough here the last like handful of years where he wasn't even really competitive sometimes. And so it's just cool. It would have been such a bigger story, obviously, storyline out of Alltech if he did win. But regardless, a great run for him, a great bounce back. And then, like you mentioned, just, man, I want to be mad at, you know, at the Southern All-Star Series for disqualifying McDowell. Like, Dale McDowell is the kind of guy that almost everyone likes. Like, he's just a likable guy. But apparently they have a rule, and it sounds like they changed 3 of their 4 tires from earlier in the night before the feature. It's giving them 7 total used for the evening, which exceeds the allotment. But, man, I don't know if you've ever tried to talk to a driver while he's strapped in. You got to tell him to turn the engine off, and you got to stick your head in there and yell at him. Because with his helmet on and everything, there's like no way he's going to be able to hear you. So I'm sure there was just, you know, Dale probably thought he heard something while he's strapped in, but you can't even probably even hear anything while you're in your car, helmet on, engine running. So that's where you just got to, as a series official, turn off your engine. You know, I'm going to lean in and yell at you what we're trying to communicate. And hopefully, you know, they could have found something to, you know, to communicate with at that point. But just a bad deal. You know, you hate to see it like that. And, you know, Ray Cook inherits the win. That's not, you know, no one wants to inherit a win like that either, but that's kind of a cool story in its own right. You know, I think it'd been a while since Ray's won, and certainly a while since he'd won on the Southern All-Stars. I think I wrote it down as 2015 might've been his last, his last series win.
Yeah. And he said, he wasn't thrilled about winning that way either. He hated to see that, but he did mention that Joe Denby owns that race car, and it's a car that he's like, this is just a little small team that we got together. So it was a big deal for them to win 10 grand. That was a good, you know, I mean, not the way they wanted. You didn't even get to go to victory lane. You know, that was, you'd like to be able to do that with your small little team, like he said, but you know, he does get the check. So congratulations to Ray for getting one win. And he doesn't get to race that much because he has so many races of his own. So it was neat to see him get one. Well, let's switch gears here. We'll go to one final topic of the weekend and of the week here. And it's, you'll notice that this weekend, the World of Outlaws, they go down to Talladega Short Track for the Alabama Gang 100. It's the second year in a row that they're having a bigger race down there. Last year was 50 grand this year to win. This year it's Brandon Overton won. This year it's 35,000, but they've kind of redistributed the purse a little bit more to get it back to into the, you know, back paying to everyone else. The one thing that's really interesting about the weekend is it's the same weekend as the NASCAR weekend at Talladega Super Speedway, right across the street. You know, I'm not sure if you can walk across there. I guess it'd be a hike. I guess you could do it, but I mean, I don't think I'd want to walk across the track, but you can really get there pretty, it's visible once you get out on the road. So my question is to both of you, we're riffing off here off our fast talk question too, about like, does having a NASCAR, having a late model race near, right in proximity on the same weekend as a big NASCAR weekend, does that make you want to go to the NASCAR Cup race on Sunday? Take that in, kind of stick around for another day to see the big leagues of racing. Personally, I haven't done it for a long time. Back in the day, I might have done it for sure. I think I'd want to go to every race possible, but it's been like more than 20 years, I think, since I've even been to a NASCAR Cup race. So I had a chance last year at Talladega to do it, but I didn't. When I was there covering that Alabama Gang 100. How about you guys? Start with Kyle. I mean, I believe you did it last year, actually, for a couple races when they weren't even really that close to the race, to the late model race you ran the night you covered the night before. So I'd imagine you'd do it if it was right across the street.
Yeah, one race last year, I went from Speed Weeks to California to Los Angeles. So
that's right. You did that, yeah.
Probably never do that again. So it's probably one thing for the history books and storytelling, like as we're doing now. But I love the double headers, and there's actually a few of them not that far down the road here. I mean, Gordy Gundaker's event, right, Gordy, at Tri-Cities. Yeah, he has it. the same weekend when NASCAR is at Gateway. So, and then obviously this weekend too at Talladega. And I think the Hunt to Front Series also coordinated on the fall race at Talladega last year. Last fall. So, I do like seeing these doubleheaders, and because I would like to attend them myself, you know, both races, if that's all possible. And so I think from just as somebody in the industry who wants to know as many people as possible in the industry, whether if that's in dirt late model racing or not, just motorsports in general, I try to get out to as many races as I possibly can, especially, you know, in NASCAR, it's like I went to even the Bristol Dirt Race last year and got to talk with Chase Briscoe and Tyler Reddick. And I mean, they keep up with Dirt on Dirt and what we do. And I was quite enlightened to hear that. And so, and Kyle Larson too, he checks our website more than maybe we think. And so he reads our stories and checks the schedules. But like point in case said, like, you know, a lot of those guys, you know, they do follow dirt late model racing, and a lot of those industry personnel in NASCAR too, they follow our sports. So it's really cool to show up and ask them or have them interested in what we do too. And so, you know, that's one reason why I like it. And I'm sure Aaron is on board with that too. He's a race chaser just like me. And I guess how you were back in the day there, Kevin.
Yeah, I definitely would have. A lot of times we try to get to another race. Yeah, if there's something in there, you know, like there's a race within a couple hours after that Saturday night out, a late model race somewhere, I'd probably try to do it. But now I feel like I'd do that. I'll make those kind of like, you know, next day events more for a football game, you know, like Eldora. I'll go to the Detroit Lions game on Sunday or something, or a concert. I've been to so many races now. I mean, I'm not like you young guys here where, you know, you're just ready to go to another race. I separate it a little bit now instead of just getting one for the fun of it. But man, Aaron, you were at Phoenix this year for the Cup race, right? You know, and just sell me on why I should, you know, want to go to this Cup race. It's been so long since I didn't even go to Daytona 500, and I've been for 25 years that I've been going covering speed weeks. I always fly home on Sunday. So why should I go to a Cup race now and, you know, to check it out and, you know, put a few more hours into my weekend?
It's a tough sell, but I'll expand on that. But I wanted to back up a step. I've gone to Phoenix since I was a kid. My dad, I grew up going to NASCAR. That's what my dad liked. So that's kind of, you know, what I got bought up into. So I've been going to Phoenix since the mid 90s, you know, so going on 30 years now. But anyways, so going to Phoenix for a bunch of, you know, NASCAR stuff, a lot of the dirt tracks in the Phoenix area would co-host an event that same weekend. And of course I'd catch it. Now it wasn't late models a lot of time. That's not really our thing here in the Southwest, but you know, I'd love that. You go Friday, catch qualifying, catch a truck race, go to your local dirt track that Friday night, you know, go back Saturday, catch the Busch Series or Xfinity, you know, whatever it's called. And then, you know, go catch another race on Saturday night, then go back on Sunday and catch the Cup race. So just make a weekend out of it. That's the stuff I like to do. If I was at Talladega this weekend, I would absolutely be doing both. But anyways, to kind of wrap it all together though, you know, the way I was brought up watching NASCAR, those were endurance races, you know, 100, 200, 300 laps, three or 4 hour races. You know, those are long races. So if you can be entertained and find something to watch and find something to be excited about on that type of race, it's so easy to be excited about a dirt race, man. 30, 40, 50 laps going hammer down, 100% hammer down the whole time. It's hard. It's an easy sell to get someone to come check out a dirt race. Hey, come check out this 30 lap main event. I guarantee you'll find something to watch. It's a harder sell the other way around because on a longer NASCAR race like that, you know, sometimes you gotta find a battle. All right, leaders are gone. I'm gonna go watch the seventh place battle or watch this guy. They're about to get lapped. You know, they're battling side by side in front of the leader. You know, watch that. That could get interesting. But that's a tougher sell, you know, to the average Joe. So that's kind of what NASCAR's in it. They're trying, you know, they added these planned stage cautions to try to make it more exciting, get more restarts in there. They're all running the same cars now. So, you know, can you imagine if they did that in the dirt late model world, if they mandated that everyone runs the same chassis, the chassis wars would just be completely, you know, it'd be all different. So it's really hard, you know, it's not even an apples to apples comparison, but it's just all different type of racing. But at the end of the day, it's still racing, and I love going to sit in the stands, catching some sun, and, you know, hang out for 3 or 4 hours and watch a race. That sounds like a good time to me, but I know it's not for everybody. Mm-hmm.
I know. I do. I mean, I do like races. I'll go to sprint car races. Obviously I like big block races. I'll go to an asphalt modifieds and super modifieds on pavement too. I don't know. There's just something about like NASCAR where I just don't get into it as much as I used to. I mean, I've said it before, like I can look at the Winston poster from 1987 or something, and I can name every single driver that's on that poster. And I can't name every, I can't just look at everybody and know who they are now. I guess I don't have the connection with so many of the drivers that I used to have with NASCAR. I mean, I do like, you know, Kyle Larson, you know, and Briscoe and Tyler Reddick, you know, I mean, there are those dirt connections that just keep my interest. But overall, in the whole scheme of it, there aren't as many drivers, I feel like, because they most of the drivers haven't won a lot in short track racing like they used to. Like my guy Jeff Bodine used to. I mean, that guy went 50 races in a season in a modified before he went to NASCAR. And there's the only guys that have won that many races that are NASCAR drivers in a season with short track racing, very few. I mean, there's not many of them that have that many wins in their career probably before they get to NASCAR. So that's one of the things, but I do like to see, I would like to see Talladega because just of the car. I mean, the noise of the race cars and how big that racetrack, how impressive it is to see them going that fast. That is something that's the attraction, right, Kyle, of NASCAR, just the atmosphere of those cars. I mean, you feel it, like how loud they are, how fast they're going. It's pretty neat.
Definitely. Talladega is on my bucket list. I've been to Darlington, Richmond, Martinsville, Dover, Pocono, LA Coliseum, Chicago Street Course. The Chicago Street Course race falls in the same kind of week as the Summer Nationals, too. I think it does this year as well. So
It's not right around July 4th, right? Something like that. Yep.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's not too far off the Summer Nationals trail. I'm not sure where the Summer Nationals are at this year, that weekend, but it definitely worked out for me to get there last year. And so I like to think if anything is within like two-ish, three-ish hours, you know, that gets my gears turning as to, okay, I think we can pull this off.
It's doable, right? It's doable, right, Kyle?
right. I think when you start creeping up toward, you know, the four and a half hour toes, especially five, it's like it depends on the place, you know, time and place and how you're feeling when you're waking up the next day. And but if it's a situation like this weekend at Talladega short track, then yeah, I would totally love to be there. And it's cool though maybe you can touch on this too, Kevin, but it's cool to, I feel like, see some of the dirt promoters like Gordy Gundaker, what Steve Francis is doing on the Outlaws, even Hunt the Front, you know, trying to create more of these doubleheader weekends. I'm not sure how prominent that was and how relevant that was back a decade ago or even back in the early 2000s, but it's cool to see, you know, it's cool to see that as an option in certain places where you can go. You know, if I'm a race fan and if I only have X amount of vacation days and if I want to get as much racing in for my buck outside of speed weeks, it's cool to see other options on the schedule throughout the year that allows you to see both pavement, NASCAR, stock cars, and getting out to some of the best dirt facilities in the country.
And big deals too. I mean, some of these races now that they're, you know, that's a big deal for Talladega Short Track this weekend. And it has to help them, you know, put that show on because there'll be so many people in town. You know, hopefully you don't, if you could just get a little percentage of those people to come over to the short track too, it helps. And then it could help the big track get a few extra people too. With dirt track people coming in, you know, hopefully there's a little crossover. But I remember back in like when I was growing up, like into like when I started going in like the late 80s and stuff and mid to late 80s, there wasn't like just say with Pocono or Dover, you know, there wasn't like a huge race for modifieds or anything scheduled that weekend in close proximity to those tracks. But there would always be races. They're like the weekly shows would be there. And Bobby Allison came and ran Flemington during a NASCAR weekend. And that happened a lot. A lot of times they would have, I think it was in the 80s too, they would have like four or five NASCAR drivers come and run like a together at a dirt track nearby wherever they were racing. And a lot of time they even did it with crew guys, you know, crewmen from NASCAR teams would come over to a track and run micro sprints or something, you know, there was always that kind of just that little combination thing. And you don't, now it's more of like, hey, let's set up a bigger race right near the NASCAR event. But man, I just haven't gotten that energy up, I guess, to go do it yet. Like last year, I could have done it at Talladega. I was a half hour north though, my hotel. Didn't want to go back. What do you think? I'm probably crazy, right? Right, Aaron? I should have done it, you know?
I think you should have, just to, if nothing else, like Kyle said, just to check that one off the list. Like,
yes.
I'm the type of guy, I keep a list of all the tracks I've been to. I want to put Talladega on my list. I want to go check out the infield of Talladega. I hear there's some interesting things that happen in the infield, but I think the biggest thing overall, when you compare, you know, NASCAR to dirt racing, is just the aura of the event. Like at NASCAR, you have 50,000 plus, you know, in Talladega, you probably have closer to 100,000 people there this weekend.
Yep.
Now, granted, dirt racing, I think, is on the rise. You know, popularity, the streaming, social media has helped with that. I think dirt racing is definitely, you know, across all, you know, disciplines, sprint cars, late models, you know, the overall popularity is gaining. NASCAR has that popularity, so they have that big time event feel. It's just whether their on track product is entertaining and exciting enough. That's where I think you don't get a lot of the crossover. You know, you don't see people going to the dirt races as much, and then to NASCAR, it's a whole different type of race. So, you know, I totally understand not everyone's going to do that. I like watching racing. I'll sit there in the stands for 2, 3, 4 hours and have a great time. I'll find something to entertain myself with, even if the racing's not great. But I don't know, that's the way I was brought up, was going to the races. And I think the biggest thing, you know, like you touched upon, you used to have the blue collar guys back in the day, you know, Dale Earnhardt, Bobby the Allisons, those guys that you could really almost relate to back in the late 80s, early 90s. Then on top of that, they come to those one-off short track deals where they come promote the local, it would help promote the short track because they get probably their biggest fan count of the year. And then on top of that, it would promote the Sunday race because they're probably racing nearby that weekend on Sunday. So it's kind of a twofold. I would love to see that where maybe not even at NASCAR, maybe the local dirt track can help promote the NASCAR race. But, you know, nowadays it's all comes down to dollars and cents. So, you know, NASCAR is not going to go out of their way to promote something that they're not going to make a profit off of. And, you know, same thing the other way. But that's what we're missing, I think. If anything, the late 80s, early 90s was that connection of, let's get the local fan that doesn't even know about the Sunday race, or let's get the people who know about the Sunday race, maybe they'll go check out the local track they've never checked out. That's the type of crossover we could use some more of these days, I feel like.
Yeah, the one NASCAR thing is, too, when I talk about some drivers, they used to come, like a Dale Earnhardt didn't start out at 18 years old in the Cup Series, you know. He'd won a lot of races on those little short tracks, knocking around all over the place in the South. And all, most of them, I mean, the Bobby Allison, all of them, Jeff Bodine, like I said, all these guys, they raced a lot as short track racers and were successful. And then were a little bit older when they got into it. They had fans. They had a fan base. Most of these NASCAR drivers, when they come in there, they're just like, you know, they had a top five finish in an ARCA race somewhere, and then they suddenly, you know, they can speak well or something. And then they go in a, suddenly into a NASCAR. They get them in a Cup car. You know, I mean, it's that doesn't have a connection to the short track base of us. You know,
it's all different. Like it's all different
they're used
now.
To be. Yeah, it's totally different. So that's a topic for another day. Almost, we could probably we could riff on that for a long time, guys. But let's go on to one more thing. This is our real one more thing now. Just to, you know, come up with something else that you want to mention. One more thing for this week. Go ahead. You can start, Kyle.
Yeah. So I talked to Ethan Dotson after he left Coltman Farms Racing. And, you know, also a side note there, it was a mutual split. You know, I do take Ethan's words there for that. And, you know, the sports of business. And, you know, that said, he will be racing for Chris Bragg here in the foreseeable future. Doesn't know exactly what the schedule looks like. You know, he's not sitting too bad in the outlaw points. I think he's 12th or 13th or something like that. So he's not too far out of the rookie race, but he's not sure if he can continue forward on the series. He'd like to. The team's just going to take it literally one weekend at a time. I mean, it just came together in a 48-hour span leading up to Farmer City this past weekend. So they really don't know, you know, what they can take on and what's realistic there for them. So, but he will be racing for Chris Bragg in the foreseeable future. And I'm sure they can get back to their ways in which that they had won two races last year on the Comp Cam series. So, and it's the same race car that he's racing now that, you know, he won at least one of his races in last year. So it's a familiar setting for him. And as for Coltman Farms Racing, you know, they don't actually talk with Brett Coleman too this past weekend. He was there at Farmer City and doesn't know exactly what he's going to do yet to fill the vacated seat, but he's definitely looking around. Let's just say that he has options. So from what it seems like.
Yeah, I'm sure his phone is ringing off the hook. As soon as there's an open seat in dirt late model racing, everyone's calling. I know, ask Mark Richards after the word got out that Hudson O'Neill was leaving. Everyone was calling him. I mean, I believe there were, you know, Aaron might have called him to try to throw his name in the hat. I'm not sure, right? So how about your one more thing, Aaron?
No, I don't have enough talent or money, unfortunately. You got to have at least one of the two, you know? But no,
hey, I heard that there were some guys there that were calling. I think that hadn't even run a late model before. So, man, you might have been able to put your name in the hat.
Now, mine was going to be, you know, I'm excited to see who's going to fill that seat at Coltman Farms. So I'm glad Kyle mentioned that. That's going to be kind of the newer. That's going to be the biggest piece of news, I feel like, that's going to break next, you know, as far as who's going to fill that seat. But anyways, I was going to, you know, as a pivot, we have racing on Thursday this week. We got some Thursday night racing this week. So we got World of Outlaws with their makeup date at Thunderhill in Tennessee. And then the MLRA, they're trying to do a triple header weekend in the state of Iowa. So they got a Cedar County Raceway in Tipton, Iowa on Thursday as well. So both those will be streamed. You got the Dirt Vision with the Outlaws, and you got Flow Racing with the MLRA. So always something I like the Thursday football, I like the Thursday racing. Give me more during the week. You know, I like that. Kind of shake up the monotony of the week.
Yeah, there we go. Space them out a little bit too. We want to have everything on the weekend, right? Put them on Thursday. Let's have a couple shows. They should have some good fields there too. Some of the Midwest guys, a lot of the Midwest guys will be running there. I know Garrett Albertson is going to run all three of them because there's no Lucas Oil race, again this weekend. So, remember, definitely check those out. Yeah, I mean, you're definitely going to want to, if you can't go, keep an eye on the streams. My one more thing, I mentioned this in my fast talk too, and I'll mention him again, was Brent Robinson, Virginia driver who won Carolina Clash at Fayetteville Motor Speedway on Saturday night. That was his first Carolina Clash win. It was his first super late model win since late 2000s. Since then he's mostly been in, you know, limited late models and steel blocks, and, you know, he's been running especially like at Dixieland and that's a track where he's won a championship at. But he ran the World of Outlaws in 2009, the full season as a rookie, in 2010 part of the season. That was back when I did the PR for the late model for the World of Outlaws, and man, I just, everybody, his whole family, his mom, dad, his girlfriend then, who was now his wife, you know, I mean, everybody was just the nicest people you can ever imagine. I mean, his mom would bring us over food that she'd cook up. Hey, you want some watermelon? Here, have some watermelon, you know, before the race. I mean, we're like, man, can you just stay on the tour forever? We don't want you to leave, you know. But a great family. And I was really, really happy to see him get a super late model touring win on Saturday. Maybe congratulations to him. Maybe he'll get a few more. When I saw Brett Robinson's name pop up as a winner, I was really happy because, man, I can't believe he's 36 years old now after seeing him as back in 2009 as a newcomer to the world of outlaws. So again, congratulations to that whole family.
He beat out Ben Watkins. You just did that piece on Watkins too.
That's so. Right. Yes. Right. Yeah, exactly. So definitely a top guy to beat out. Ben Watkins is, you know, and he's another guy who Ben actually mentioned when I talked to him. He's looking to get in that top 25. So, yeah, guys want to get in there. As we saw with Nick Hoffman, when we rank him too low, they notice. So, Watkins, maybe he'll get in there one of these weeks too. So everybody will be happy. But all right, but that's the Dirt Reporters for this week. Again, we had it was a good show. I mean, we had a little NASCAR talk. Thanks, Aaron, for joining us again. And Kyle, one of these weeks, we are going to have Todd Turner back. We sent some, thoughts and prayers out to him and his wife. His wife's mother passed away over the weekend. And so they've been dealing with that. And so, again, prayers to those, to the whole family for the loss of Todd's wife's Julie's mom. Check out everything on that streaming this weekend. Check out our stories, and we'll see you again next week here on the Dirt Reporters.